If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
When I saw the wave coming, it was a mountain.
When you're actually in it, do you feel any fear, or that's like escaped your mind? Can you take us back to that day of your accident in 2013? When did you realize it was getting serious?
When I saw the size of that wave, I realized, okay, this is an experience I have never experienced before.
Have there ever been any deaths there? Has there anything bad happened? The day that you set the world record, as the wave was coming, is that something you're like, this is it, this is the wave?
So I had to make a decision, you know, do I want to risk my life again to achieve my dream?
Welcome back to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Today's guest, her name is Maya Gabiria. She holds the world's record for the largest wave ever surfed by a woman. She set the record in Nazaré, Portugal, surfing a 73.5-foot wave in 2020, officially recognized by the Guinness World Records. Here's the thing. She was there a couple years before, I think it was 4 years before, and was almost killed. She was underwater for 10 minutes. In this episode, we talk about how she got into surfing in general, how she recovered from this incident, and how she became the world record holder. She is a true inspiration. Her journey from facing life-threatening challenges to breaking barriers in a male-dominated sport is a testament to her resilience and passion for the ocean. Today, Maya will dive into the new documentary that's out, Maya and the Wave. You guys really have to see it. It's unbelievable. Just watching the trailer will make you cry. So you gotta check it out. She recounts the harrowing experience of being taken down by one of the largest waves ever recorded off the coast of Portugal. She shares the fear, the recovery, and what it took to come back stronger, ultimately conquering the same wave and securing her place in surfing history. Please welcome my guest, Maya Gabiria. Maya, it is such an honor to have you on my show. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Where are you right now?
I'm in New York City.
Oh, you are? Okay. Is that where you live now?
No, I live very hidden and actually on the countryside of Nazaré, believe it or not.
Oh, you do? Portugal.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So are you in town to promote? What are you doing in New York?
I started off my trip doing board meeting for Oceana, which is an NGO that I sit on the board that works on ocean conservation. And then I had the lovely premiere of Maya and the Wave. And now I'm just trying to rest a bit, write and do meetings and feel the city.
Great. Your story is so unbelievable. I'm so excited that Maya and the Wave is out. It is like it makes you feel in awe of just watching your life story, but it makes you laugh, it makes you cry, it makes you feel so proud. It gives you chills throughout. Even the trailer, like, just brings you, your body feels the emotion of it. You know what I mean? So I want to get into what that was like to make it, but I want to hear about your life. So can you just tell me how did you even get into surfing?
I got into surfing when I was 13 or 14 years old in Rio. I was a dancer when I was very young, and I loved dancing very, very much. I was passionate and super, super dedicated. But when I was around 11 or 12, I suddenly quit, and I went for a little while without a sport, and I really needed a sport. I was meant to be an athlete. And then surfing appeared in my life through a boyfriend at the time and friends. And I just tapped into the energy of being free, you know, and in the ocean. I loved the environment and I was very scared. So it was a good goal to work towards.
Right. So, but there are a couple elements of it, right? And explain maybe surfing to people that haven't done it. I have done it maybe once and I'm terrible at it. I'm too scared of the water. But also, you know, there's a balance that takes, you know,
Yes.
you have to really understand it. So explain what you have to be good at to be good at this sport.
Yes, I think it's a complex sport because we deal with nature,
Yeah.
and the ocean is always moving, changing. So I think it really implies some ocean knowledge and reading and timing that you only really acquire with experience out there. And then the other side is you're standing up on a surfboard. So you need to have good balance. And to me also is a sport that demands style. So I think that I was able to tap into a little bit through my dancing experience and my balance too. I think dancers, you know, have great balance and have great understanding of their bodies and how it works and how they move and what happens. And I think that helped me with surfing.
So, did you? I know that you ended up moving to Hawaii when you were around 17. Do I have that correct? So, did you do that because you knew that you wanted to have a path to basically surf and to figure out if this was something you could do for a living?
Exactly. Yes, totally. I was passionate about surfing. I wanted to leave Brazil. I had that in my mind, like very clear. And I loved the English language. I grew up as a bilingual, but I had German as a second language, and I was
Oh,
really
wow.
passionate about English. And Hawaii was just kind of like it kind of fell into my life. I really actually wanted to go back to Australia, which I had gone when I was 15 to study. But Hawaii was a cheaper ticket, believe it or not. And I had a layover in Hawaii of 3 months, and that's how I got to experience an offshore. And that was the like strongest professional competitive surf culture that I had ever seen until then. I had experienced Australia, which was very surf culture, multi-generational kind of surfing culture, but in Hawaii and on the North Shore specifically, I was able to understand what professional surfing meant.
Right. And what does professional surfing mean? I mean, you see all these people that are out there kind of sitting around waiting for waves, but explain the difference. How do you really know that it's professional surfing and that's what you want to get into?
Well, you're just so dedicated. You know, it's about dedication, it's about love, it's about not having quite, you know, the normal life of a 17-year-old girl. You know, you don't go out, you wake up really early, you train all day, you have to travel a lot after that if you really want to make it professional. So there's a lot of demands, you know, and you have to learn how to read the ocean really well because, you know, different than other sports, we're not in the same ramp as every competitor. The
Right.
way that we surf is unique. So you have to be able to kind of tap into reading the wave and knowing what is going to happen once you catch it, if that's going to be a special wave. And
Right.
also you have to have the timing right. You have to be in the right place at the right time. So it's very complex.
So how do you even like practice for something like this? I mean, there's got to be so many times you don't get it right. But not getting right is just not like falling off a balance beam. I mean, you could get injured or killed every time you don't get it right. So like, how do you learn while staying safe?
Well, the big waves, yes, you can get very injured and you could face life-threatening situations. Mm-hmm. But I didn't start on that level, right? So I kept like kind of pushing myself out of my comfort zone to get to where I wanted and envision my surfing to go to. So it took a long time, but it was about like being uncomfortable, sometimes going out there and not going out there for performance, just for experience and to see what people were doing and see what you could learn from it. Mm-hmm. It kept me humble because, you know, as an athlete, you want to go out there and you want to perform and you want to, you know, always kill it and come back with like great results. And big wave surfing, when you're kind of like starting on the path, it's not about that, you know, it's about being humble and accepting that you're learning every day. And a lot of times you don't get results.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting. You mentioned a couple of times that you were scared when you were younger and sometimes you're scared. How do you differentiate between healthy fear that keeps you safe and the kind of fear that could hold you back?
It is difficult. I like fear. You know, I think there is, and it's hard. I wouldn't know how to describe it in words exactly, but there is a fear that stops you. And mm-hmm. and that fear is healthy, you know, because that fear shows you your limits at that point. Doesn't mean that will be your limits forever, but it's a fear that kind of like makes you not want to go, like really not want to go. And that is like an insight that is important, because if you are in life-threatening conditions, you have to accept your instincts when they go in that direction, because that saved your life.
Yeah.
But then there's another, you know, kind of fear that wants to stop you, but you know you have the tools. Mm. You know you've trained for it. You know you have what it takes. And that one you push through. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't be able to put in words like what clicks to what is one, what is another, but they're different experiences.
Yeah, yeah. Can you explain, I mean, I don't know if it's easy to explain, but to people that are listening that might not have the experience at all that you have, even the amateur experience of surfing, what is the addiction kind of to being riding on this wave? I mean, we've watched this on the screen before and it looks so scary and so beyond anything that the average person would try. Being in that, can you explain what it's like from the moment you're waiting for the wave, seeing it come? Like, explain the whole process.
Well, you're waiting, you're in the ocean. There's no better place to be. You feel free, you know, society is behind you on land. So that's a wonderful feeling. And you're waiting, you're practicing patience, which is not something we practice often. Mm-hmm. And when you see the wave, you have to really switch on and decide that you want it and you want to go. And then you use your physicality, of course, to paddle and paddle fast and catch the wave. And when you're surfing it, then you tap into being present, which I think that is the pure beauty of it, mm-hmm. right? You're not thinking about the past. You're not tuning into the future. You're having to adapt and adjust and use your body and your mind together to be so connected in that present moment that makes it very addictive.
Right. Wow. And when you're actually in it, do you feel any fear, or that's like escaped your mind?
No. Once you're on it, it's usually not tapping into fear anymore. It would be dangerous to go there. You got to be brave. Once you decided to go, you have to like, you have to be brave.
Can you take us back to that day of your accident in 2013? What went through your mind when you realized the severity of the situation? And when did you realize it was getting serious?
This episode is brought to you by Holistic Goddess. Holistic Goddess has been such a trusted resource for me on my health journey. One product I really wanted to highlight is their Holistic Menopause Support by PhD Health. It's been a game changer for me during perimenopause, and here's why I love it. It eases discomfort. It really helps with hot flashes and mood swings. It boosts focus. The ingredients in it, including creatine, support mental sharpness. I feel more focused and clear-headed, which is so important for my busy days. It nurtures comfort. It gently addresses vaginal dryness with black cohosh. It's comforting to have that support during this time. It has natural ingredients. I love that it uses these ingredients like sage and rhubarb extract. If you're going through similar changes like perimenopause and menopause, I highly recommend giving this a try. It's been a relief for me, and I think it could help you too. Go to holisticgoddess.com and use code UNDERSTOOD for 15% off all orders. Again, that's holisticgoddess.com for 15% off using code UNDERSTOOD. You know, running a business can be challenging, especially when it comes to managing sales and making sure everything runs smoothly. That's where Shopify has made all the difference for me. For our Misunderstood merch, Shopify has been a game changer. Before, we struggled with keeping track of orders and making the buying business seamless for our fans. But now everything's in one place. The checkout process, super smooth, just like we want it to be for our audience. With Shopify, I don't have to worry about technical headaches, whether it's selling directly from our website or across social media. It's all connected. The best part, it's the same checkout system we use ourselves. Trust me, it's easy, reliable, and our fans love it too. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout we use with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/understood in all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/understood to upgrade your selling today. That's shopify.com/understood.
I realized when after I popped up off the wave that I fell on, I saw the wave behind marching towards me. And I didn't see my partner anywhere close to me. And I felt really alone. Mm-hmm. And when I saw the size of that wave, I realized, okay, this is an experience I have never experienced before. This is going to be different. And this is probably going to take me to the limit or to death. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. And I got pretty nervous. It was a pretty stressful moment to make those realizations. The wave actually eventually hit me. At the time, we didn't have the same equipment we have today. So we didn't have flotation jackets, the jackets that have O2 cartridges, and we can use them and it fills up with air and you come up much quicker. We only have at the time, we only had kind of normal impact, a little bit buoyant life jackets. Mm. And I got hit really hard on that wave. And I was under for a long, long, long time. And I had what I think most people experienced before, you know, dying. I had a lot of thoughts about my life. I had family and loved ones intrude my head. I was sad. I was sad that I was going through that, that I was maybe going to die. And then after those thoughts, I had to let go because there was a job to be done. I needed to kind of tap into my survival mode and work with the tools I had, which I had a lot, to be able to go through that experience, right? I was a good diver at that point, a good free diver. I was pretty experienced on holding my breath and being out of oxygen and all the sensations that came with it. And once I let go and I accepted that I had put myself in that shit show, I started, you know, kind of really acting with the tools I had. The second wave, at that point, the third wave came and I was about to break the surface and it actually imploded on me and I wasn't even able to catch a breath. And that's when my life jacket even came out of me. So yeah. I blacked out underwater and had a little like episode underwater. And that was when, you know, I released everything. And when I got back up to the surface, it was all instinct. I had no control over it. I was acting upon the tools and the experience I've had gathered throughout my life, but I wasn't really there anymore.
Right. What did you physically feel when you finally came up and took your first breath?
I had a lot of dizziness. So like you start seeing a lot of stars when you're going hypoxic.
Okay.
I had a noise in my ears that went like, yeah. It was like having like a siren.
Ooh,
wow. I had my throat was closing. So at the same time, I was up and with my mouth, you know, outside the water, but I couldn't really catch a breath because it had prevented me of drowning underwater. So it was kind of like it was closing and didn't want to open again because it didn't switch to the idea that I wasn't underwater anymore, blacked out. Because that's right. A mechanism your body does to save you when you black out underwater. So it was hard because I kept in the process of being depleted of oxygen. Mm. And the very last thing that happened was I was not there anymore. And my partner at the time just kind of yelled at me, grabbed the rope, because I was obviously drifting towards a place that was very dangerous, was the cliffs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the last vital sign that we lose is hearing before we die. And that I only did, I don't know what strength I did that, but I did held on the rope. And that was the last thing I had in me. Hearing was the last thing I lost before going black.
Wow. Oh, it just gives me chills to hear that whole story. So how long do you think you were holding your breath and underwater in total?
I think the whole episode was like up to 10 minutes.
Wow.
From the first wave that I fell on to getting myself to the shore and being dragged and resuscitated was around 10 minutes.
Again, people haven't watched this yet, so I'm having you narrate this a little bit, but who was there with you? Who was on the beach? Who was there in the water with you? Can you explain a little bit about people around watching this?
Yeah, I had my partner at the time. He was kind of a mentor of mine at that stage in my life. He was 20 years older. He had himself a world record. His name is Carlos Bulli. And he was inexperienced, let's say, to work through that episode with me. We were both inexperienced. And it was tough because we didn't have the right equipment and we didn't have the right knowledge and training to make it through, really. I think in the end, there was some luck in there. And we had on the beach, we had a lifeguard that really helped me because he was the one that understood that they had to turn me to the right side for the vomit to start happening.
Mm-hmm.
He helped me on the resuscitation. He did all the CPR procedures. And we had a person on the cliff with the radio, which came down running and got the ambulance to come as fast as possible.
Right. Can you explain what your recovery was like from that?
Ooh. It was a 4-year recovery.
Yeah. Explain what happened to your body after that and why.
Yeah. At first I broke my leg on that episode. So I broke my fibula.
Wow.
I went to the hospital and I had pneumonia, which is normal, you know, after you drink a lot of water.
Mm-hmm.
But I was released from intensive care in 24 hours, which was very optimistic. But I had a back injury my whole life at that point, since I was 18. Mm-hmm. And that accident, it really worsened. And I believe not even a year later, I started the complications of doing spine surgeries. And then I had to do 3 of them to get to where I am today.
Wow. And how are you feeling today?
I feel great. I mean, it's not like I'm the healthiest person in the world. You know, I've put my body through a lot of abuse.
But I mean, would you say that you, after 4 years or whatever, that you made a full recovery?
Oh yeah. I peaked again. And I think that was I needed to, you know, in order to break world records and to surf at that level, I would only be able to get there if I was much, much better than before, you know? So I did not only get healthy, but I became a much better athlete.
Can you explain that, like getting over the fear of what happened? Because most people, whether they fall off a horse or go through something like you, would just be like, I'm not doing this anymore. This is too scary. I could lose my life. And then the fear from actually what happened would prevent them from ever doing it again. You end up going back to the exact same spot and winning a world record there, right?
Yeah.
How did you even do that?
Yeah, it was complicated. It was not easy, you know, but it was clear to me that that was the next frontier for my sport. I knew that every world record from that moment on would be broken on that place. So it was not like I had an option. And yeah. I dreamt about having a world record my whole life. And so it was about deciding whether my dream was worth risking my life again.
Mm.
And I think everyone that doubted me and the really harsh criticism that I was offered on that moment really helped me in a way, because I was so scared to go back.
Mm-hmm.
And people were telling me consistently that I should never go back, that I had to really, really dive inside. And that was lucky because I was laying on my back for many, many months of those 4 years.
Yeah.
So I had to make a decision, you know, do I want to risk my life again to achieve my dream? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the answer became yes. And that's why I did what I did. But, you know, I had to dig really deep. I had PTSD. I had, you know, a lot of physical issues, mental issues. And, you know, I worked through them, but with the answer being clear, you know, that I did want to do it, that I was the right person to do it.
I'm curious, is that a location that was known for having really scary, tough, huge waves in general? Or was it just that one day that something really terrible happened to you?
No, the 2010, that place was basically pioneered by Garrett McNamara and some other man. And he broke the record, the male record that day over there, that year over there. And when he started, you know, showing the world what the place was capable, it was easy to see that that place was special. That place has the geography, it has a Grand Canyon of the United States underwater in front of the cliff. Oh. It has everything to produce the biggest waves in the world. So from that moment on, the sport has never been the same. Hmm. You know, every world record, man or a male, has been broken there.
Right. Have there ever been any deaths there? Has there anything bad happened?
Yeah, we had our first death, unfortunately, two seasons ago. Not last season, the one before.
Wow. From a drowning.
Yeah, from a drowning. Yeah.
Wow. And can you explain, I mean, this may be a really dumb question, but how do those guys that are sitting there on the little motorcycle things, like how do they stay afloat? To me, that looks even scarier because they're like,
the jet skis.
Yeah, that looks terrifying to me also.
Yeah, it is terrifying, but you know, it's our job too. We alternate between being surfers and being jet ski drivers. So we have to have those two skills. I drive my partner as much as he drives me.
Got it.
And I think it's complementary. I love driving a jet ski and really, really rough seas. It's one of my favorite things to do in the world. Not only because you're giving the gift of a huge wave to an amazing athlete, but also you're the person that can save their lives. And there's nothing more beautiful than that.
Yeah, that's true. Talk about for one more second, the day that you set the world record. As the wave was coming, is that something you're like, this is it, this is the wave? Or like what goes through your head?
The first world record, because I have two.
Yeah, I know.
The first world record, I did actually know that was the day. And I did actually see the wave and I knew it was that wave, the world record. My whole focus was not to fall, because mm-hmm. it was such a controversy about my name and about my place in the sport mm-hmm. that I knew the men would not accept my record if I had ridden it and not gotten all the way to the end and kicked out safely into a jet ski. So my only focus was I saw the wave, I recognized it, and I said, okay, this is a world record wave for me. I'm going to surf and I'm going to make it. And that was the first world record. And then the second world record was a bit different because I was in competition. That was the first competition we ever had in Nazareth. And I was the only female competing with the men driving and surfing. And my partner is an incredible surfer. He's the world record holder right now for male athletes. And we were together like a very, very strong team. And when he accepted to surf with me as the only female doing both and surfing at that level, I felt pretty privileged. And I switched my focus completely in making sure that I was going to do the best job I could for him. Mm-hmm. And I think that by letting go of my own self and my own desires and hopes for another record or winning the contest or anything like that, I was able to tap into another thing that I hadn't been there yet. I was so focused on him and on how important that moment would like symbolize as like a woman and a man working together under that stress and those waves as a team mm-hmm. that the second world record kind of just came naturally, to be honest.
Amazing. What is it like when you're in, I'm sure there's a word for it, when you're in the hole.
The barrel.
Okay. So what are you hearing? What are you like, does your whole kind of mindset go off and it's just quiet? Like what are you going through?
It's kind of quiet. How do you know? It's kind of quiet.
When I've watched you, that's what I'm always curious about. What are you hearing and feeling or saying to yourself? I don't know.
In the Barrow is kind of quiet, but outside on the huge waves, it's no, it's war zone. You hear the power behind you, like loud and clear.
Right.
But in the Barrow, you do kind of have a sensation that you're protected from the whole world.
Right.
In there, nobody can touch you.
Right. And is the, like, do you feel like you're again, this is from somebody who's such an amateur. Do you feel like you're chasing? I get nervous when you kind of disappear and it seems like the barrel is going much faster than you. Do you know what I mean? So like, is there, do you get nervous that it's going to close in on you, or you are you're totally like, this is what it's supposed to do and I'm going to come out?
Well, sometimes as you don't know, you know, you have to believe until the very end. Sometimes
right.
you come out, sometimes you don't. When it's really big, I'll be honest with you, I don't try and get barrows in Nazareth when it's big. I think it's way too scary and way too dangerous. And I find that way very unpredictable when you think about barrows. So I don't like to go there because I'm scared. But it is the ultimatum. Like, the bigger the barrow you get, the more of an incredible feeling it is. But you know, I risk my life a lot already. So
right.
I try to sometimes balance it out. You know, I want to go here, but this one, no, let it to the boys, you know, or to other people. And I kind of make selections.
Right. Amazing. What was it like to make the documentary?
It was an adventure. You know, we started, Steph and I, we got together. It was, I think, 2011 or 12. And she was trying to film for something else. She was trying to do a small piece for ESPN on female athletes. Nobody really at that time was interested in female athletes at all or in my sport. So to have somebody from the outside that I saw was a good filmmaker be interested, it was, and a female, of course, instantly made me kind of open up to her. And then right the next year or so, I had a big accident and she decided that she wanted to follow through of the story until the end. And we had no idea what was going to happen. We kept bouncing between each other. When I was about to give up, she would incentivize me. When she was maybe going to give up, I would be like, you know, winning world records. So we kind of worked that way. But I think it brings the magic into the movie. You know, it was a relationship also between two women trying to achieve their dreams together.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So you have like beyond your personal achievements, you were starting the show by saying that you're in New York to talk on this board you're on. Tell us the other things that you do in your life besides surfing.
Yes. Nowadays, my life is very fun. I write books. I wrote 3 books already, 2 published, 1 coming out next year, and I'm writing my 4th now.
What's the one coming out next year about?
The Young Adult, a memoir.
Okay.
And
what's the one you're writing?
It's my real memoir.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. Love that.
Then I do speaking engagements. For companies or for UNESCO or UN or Oceana itself.
Mm-hmm.
In Oceana, I do like, I do sit on the board. So I have meetings, a few meetings every year that we work through everything we have to work through. And I'm also an ambassador for them. And I work with my sponsors as an athlete and just shooting campaigns or things like that.
And so how often are you surfing now?
I surf a lot still. When I go home now on September 25th, then I start focusing back on my season, which starts in October. During the summer, I travel a lot. I do tap into the different projects more during summer. And then summer, I like to go surf in Indonesia. I write over there too. So I kind of do both together. I write and I surf isolated in the middle of nowhere, which I like because it kind of taps into my creativity better.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the Maldives this year to surf. And I go to Brazil also for work. I surf a bit there. So I keep life interesting and kind of free.
For people that are listening to you that love surfing, that are into surfing, really want to learn more about it, where would you suggest is a great place for people to go to surf?
Oh, wow. I think honestly, in the beginning, the ocean, anywhere you are, you know, it's not an easy sport to start. And when you start, you just need to push through that begin, which is hard. And it's, you know, about you understanding the sea and you understanding the board, you getting up on a board. You don't need good waves. You don't need a perfect spot, you know. start learning wherever you are. And then, of course, after, if you have the means, then do surf trips to places that are adequate, like Costa Rica or Maldives. And there's amazing places in the world. But yeah. I would start right where I live.
Yeah. But do you think that there is a healthy amount of fear to have? I mean, listen, I know I just spoke to somebody yesterday. I said I had you coming on and they said, oh, one of my friends, I'm going to a funeral tomorrow because he died in a surfing accident in the Bahamas like last week, which just goes to show you that so many people may love the sport, but they're not professionals, you know, and they're reckless and they lose their life doing it. So, you know, do you think there should be a healthy amount of fear that goes along with this kind of sport? Because it's not like easy. It's not for everyone to be doing.
I think there should be a healthy amount of fear for us to go through life.
Yeah.
You know, I think when we walk on the streets, there's dangers. I think when I'm in Indonesia, you know, if a coconut falls on my head from a tall coconut tree, I'm dead, you know. There's sharks, there's life, there's cars, there's motorbike accidents. I think if you live life completely fearless, then you're reckless, then you die, you know, sooner than you should. Yeah. But also if you live life blocked with fear, you don't live. You just kind of survive. And I think surviving is a waste of time because we only really get one shot.
Yeah, that's beautifully said. Last question. What advice would you give to young female athletes who look up to you and aspire to make their mark in extreme sports?
Keep pushing, you know, keep finding the goal that's within you. Sometimes people around you, they don't see it. They don't see what we see. They don't see that we can break records, that we can compete with men, that we can take it to the next level. And, you know, that certainty has to come first from you. And you have to find it in yourself.
Yeah, you're amazing. Maya, tell people where they can find out more about you and about the movie.
Me, you can find me at Maya on Instagram. And the movie, it's mayaandthewave.com. Over there you have the showtimes, all the different cinemas it's going through right now, festivals we're still doing. And yeah, hopefully it gets picked up by somebody. We still haven't sold the movie yet. And that's kind of, you know, Stephanie's, the director's goal to have a home for the movie so people can watch it.
The movie is so inspirational. You are inspirational. You're amazing. It was an honor to meet you. Thank you so much. And again, for people listening, if you want to hear more about her, she's at M-A-Y-A.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled M-I-S-S, understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.